and welcome to Casting Nets Podcast. I'm Will Harley. Thank you for joining us for today. Before we jump into our topic, I'd like to give our brief disclaimer, and that is we gather around a table and the opinions that we share aren't necessarily the opinions of our called church bodies, nor are they the opinions of our synod, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. But they are our conversations, our meanderings of our thought. And if something we say offends you, you have two choices. You can always shut everything off and go on your merry way, or you can contact us, and we'd be more than happy to have a conversation with you. So without further ado, let's get into our show. Hello, and welcome to my host. He's back again, our guest host here. Don Winsberger is back. He had some party times with some basketball, and I'm sure he'll have some aggravations to share throughout the podcast for that. We want to thank you for listening to last week's show. Last week's show, we've had more people download and listen to that within a week's period of time than any of our other ones that we put up there. So I don't know if you just like Lexi as a better host than the other than either of us, or if the topic was just happened to hit things right on. And so thank you for listening.
I'm an advocate of the fact that I think Lexi should just take over and both of us should be out of the picture. But that's just my opinion.
Well, you know, she has a better presence than we do. But today, our topic that we want to sort of to hash out and talk about is something else that I think is going around and needs to be said and needs to be talked about. And that is this idea or the reality of a Christian going into the public school, specifically Christian kids in the public school setting, in the public school system that we have today. And so now that my co-host in crime, Don, is here, we can maybe have this wonderful conversation about the Christian and the public school. Now, because, Don, you kind of started your family later in life and sort of jumped in with a daughter who was already in a public school setting, maybe you can talk a little bit about how that has been a challenge, but also because you were raised in an LES, you were raised in an LES setting, so you can talk a little bit more about the LES setting and maybe some of the because I was raised in not an LES. For those who don't know what LES is, it's a Lutheran elementary school. I was raised in a non-denominational undergrad, or I should say grade school. And so those things I can talk about too. But give us some insights. Take it away.
Well, thank you. I was raised in a Lutheran elementary school, kindergarten through eighth grade, and then went to public high school for 4 years. Before going on to Lutheran College. So I had a chance for 4 years to really make some comparisons and to contrast a lot of things. And I can tell you that I probably really didn't appreciate my Christian education until I got into the public school setting. And now, once again, this takes us back over 40 years ago. And the culture, the atmosphere in the public school was a lot different then than it is today. At least I can say that when I went to 4 years of public high school, I had teachers, most of my teachers were Christian, held Judeo-Christian beliefs. If you sat in on a biology class, and when it came time for evolution to be taught, my teacher could say, "None of us believe this stuff, but I have to teach it to you anyway." We could at least start with prefaces like that. Faith wasn't under attack as much as it is today. Not saying it wasn't under attack, but not as much as today. That's different. But I will say that probably one of the key differences that I noticed, Will, when I went to public high school, was a difference in the care and the concern of my teachers. I really had an eye-opener. Probably it was my sophomore year of high school, and I came to one of my teachers for help, and I was really struggling with the class, and he said to me, "I don't care." And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean I don't care?" He said, "I don't care how you do. The only thing I care about is whether I get my paycheck on Friday." And I lost every ounce of respect for him and all of the other teachers that pretty much had no problem with his attitude. An eye-opener, and maybe it was, I could see the Lord's hand that as I started Lutheran College, that made me appreciate the men that I had there that taught me and actually got to see again, these people really care about me.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up. I don't think any of our LES institutions or our higher education institutions are going to have any bragging rights about being the most lucrative of job positions. You don't want to make the comment that the synod would boast the fact that, or the idea of keeping them poor and the Lord keeping them humble. But I think by the nature of the beast, because we're drawing from a much smaller pool of people who are finding value in this, I think the pay scale is a lot less in the LESs, in the Lutheran elementary schools, and a lot less in our colleges. But the people who are there are also committed to being there not because of the money. They're committed to being there because of the education, because of the kids, and because of the core in the background of Christ and Him crucified and the sharing of the gospel. That being said, you know, I went to a in my past, I went from a public school up to fifth grade, and the reason I was pulled out of the public school was because and I remember it almost as clear as day. We had a free reading period when I was in fifth grade. We were given a free reading period. You could bring any book you wanted and to read. So I brought the Bible. And I brought the Bible out, and I was going to sit and read that during my free reading period. And I was sent to the principal's office because they said, "You can't bring that. You can't read that in school." And the principal said, "That is the only book that's banned from reading." And so my mom came down and said, "So you're saying that, you know," I remember her saying, "So if you brought any other religious book from any other faith, that would have been okay." And they said, "Yeah, because that's literature. That's culture. But this was not." So it was right then and there, my dad, who was at that time limitedly churched, a polite way of saying non-practicing Catholic, he was the first one to step forward and said, "Absolutely not, we're pulling him." And then they sent me to, we couldn't afford an LES because we weren't in the association. And we happened to run across a non-denominational, and we could go into what that means, non-denominational. But anyway, non-denominational grade school. And they put me into that, and they said, "This is better than nothing." They said, this is better. At least you can use your Bible here. At least you can open up your Bible here. And they thought that was better than nothing. And I was one lone Lutheran in a class that had one Lutheran and one Catholic. I was a Lutheran. There was a Catholic, and the rest were Baptist, Methodist, and the like. And that sort of was the same way from grade school then into high school, because it was the same system, and I stayed in the high school there. And I can say it taught me a lot, but one thing I did notice, and I can't say that I noticed necessarily the level of, I was too young to maybe make that association with the teachers in my grade school didn't care, as opposed to the teachers in the Christian school. But I did notice one thing, that the teachers in the public school seemed to be more, we'll throw this out here and see if it sticks. You know, that like, I remember one class we went into, and they had taken all the chairs away, and we had bean bags because they thought, a better conducive learning environment. you know, you're relaxed. Drove me nuts. It really drove me nuts.
In one of my daughter's classrooms today in the public school, one of the teachers has music playing during the whole class. And of course, my daughter doesn't. She just happened to mention, "Oh, I like that." And I'm going, "How can you concentrate?" "Well, we do." And I'm going, "You complain constantly that all your classes are just mayhem and no discipline. That's the music can't be helping that."
Well, but I mean, there are churches that play music lightly during prayer in church too.
Yeah, and there's
and,
a lot of
and there's a arguments lot of my, about that.
There's a lot of my generation and older that absolutely despise that.
Absolutely, and I understand that. And I guess what I'm saying is, you know, those are just some of the outward expressions of differences, I think, between these ideas. But I wonder if this goes a little bit deeper. And I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from public school. I'm not saying that public school is horrible or whatever else. But you had brought up in your explanation that you had noted difference, right? Mm-hmm. And that was 40 years ago. You know, 1963 in Pennsylvania, we had I forgot the actual court ruling, but we had the ruling that Christianity could not be taught in any way, shape, or form within the public school sphere outside of a literature class. And that was a ruling that was made in 1963 in Pennsylvania. After that, we had it just like wildfire from that on spread through all of the public school systems throughout the country where any type of morality, any type of biblical understanding or learning was relegated to a literature class.
Can we just back the religious trolley up here just a few feet? Speaking about that, at this point, do we have to have a brief discussion about whether there's a place for that in the public school as we as Lutheran confessional Christians look at the divine call? And does that belong in the public school?
I know where you're going. So let's say this. We've talked a lot about in our podcast vocational callings, right? So let's back the trolley up a whole section, and let's go back to vocational calling. The vocational calling of morality and the transmission of belief, or religion, I wouldn't say belief or faith, because that's by the Holy Spirit, but the transmission of religion should remain with the family unit. I'm a firm believer of that, and I know you are too. The problem that we have is that our parents, especially today, it seems, have relinquished all control over their vocational calling as parents to another entity. And I'm not just saying that they've relinquished it only to the public school, because in the Lutheran elementary schools, they do it to the teachers.
And they relinquish it to the pastor in confirmation class.
Yep. Where I am now my kid's best friend. I'm their biggest cheerleader, but I'm not their teacher.
And let's clarify this a little bit too. We're not looking at, maybe to clarify it just a little bit more, it's not the school's responsibility to teach religion. And so, what we're looking at is the public school system and the government looking at Christianity and saying no, but every other religion is this is maybe it's not even a vocational issue. This is just no, Christianity can't be a part of this, but any other religion can.
But notice why. And this always aggravates me. It aggravates me. And the reason that they allow it is because every other religion, whether it be Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, whatever,
American,
it's cultural.
Yes.
It's cultural. This is not just a religion. It is their culture. And it's like they ride in on the coattails of cultural acceptance, and we have to have it, we have to allow it, we have to be permissible of it, because this is their culture, man. And look at this. I don't think you can devoid this from the Christian home. I don't think you can avoid this from the house and the vocational calling, because if Christians were what the Lord calls us to be, it would be our culture.
That was the next thing I was going to say. It's not a cultural part of many of our families.
No.
It's not a cultural part of many of our communities. It's
something you do on Sunday if you have time.
And I think that's an accurate way of looking at it. And so that really kind of answers that question, where it's basically, you know, and you could ask 1,000 other questions too. Why isn't the Bible considered literature, since it's a book? The Old Testament is definitely, you could say, the culture of Judaism.
Well, I wouldn't say that they don't consider it literature, but it's considered to be on the same level as,
yep,
you know, Homer's Odyssey.
But here's the thing: can you have education without having a part of that? My opinion is either let them all in, let them all be part of that, or ban them all. And you know what? There would be on either side. Either decision wouldn't be a bad thing.
Right. And, well, you know, I've had this conversation with my parents on numerous times, and honestly, it comes back around. It's like, you know, what is the role? If you're going to boil down, what do you actually need to survive in a society, in community, right? What do you really need to survive? What is it that the public school should be teaching to begin with? What is it that every kid needs to know?
Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Very good. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. That's what they need. And then we say, well, no, they need science. Okay, well, you can't do proper science until you understand proper math. So yep. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. Well, you need to know history. Well, you can't learn about history until you can actually read and comprehend. And I'm not just saying, okay, I can read this statement and then I can say, ask a question about what happened, what color was their coat in the story. I'm talking about reading and saying, okay, why do you think the author put this in here? Why do you think that he reacted this way? That's critical thinking skills. That comes from reading and writing and then understanding. Logic comes from math, right? Math is very logical. You learn logic from math. This equals this equals this. That's very logical.
You want me to throw in another monkey wrench into this?
Yeah, go for it.
As long as we don't get too frayed here to make things controversial. Whose responsibility, and we kind of touched on this already, whose responsibility is it for the educational and spiritual, or the whole spectrum of well-being for the child?
Well, it should be the parents.
It should be the parents. Now, I'm going to ask a controversial question here. How does the school and the government view that?
Technically, I think it's become, once you drop your kid off at school, it's their responsibility.
Yes. And speaking of a person, of a politician who didn't become our president, and we can leave that individual nameless, this particular individual for the last 20 years came up with the saying, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah, or it's the responsibility of everybody,
yes,
to raise this individual.
No, it is not the responsibility of the village to raise the child. It's the responsibility of the parents and the family. And this is something that I did probably about 20 years ago as part of our Synod's Youth Commission. I was part of I was given an assignment to evaluate some family religious family material that was being put out at that time by Aid Association for Lutherans and Lutheran Brotherhood, which is now Thrivent. And it was my job to critique a lot of this material. And throughout all of this material that was being produced by AAL/Thrivent at the time, came back, this was stuff that was influenced a lot by the government, influenced a lot by the Clintons, and And what they were saying was, it came back to, we need to involve as many individuals in the spiritual upbringing of the child. And it came back to this, it takes a village to raise a child. And on my critique on this was, tell the churches to hold up a silver cross and have a gun with a silver bullet with all of this stuff, because that is anti-biblical.
Well,
and
yeah.
I've had teachers tell me for many years, this we call, you know, in so many words, we call the shots here. And I've had to tell teachers, I don't work for you. You work for me.
Sure.
And they don't see it that way.
Oh, no. Well, you know, Proverbs 22, you were talking, and I was thinking about that, and I was going through it. Proverbs 22, 6, right? Everybody is, a lot of parents have quoted it, especially the older generation, because they wonder why their kids are no longer in the church. But I think it fits here. Proverbs 22, 6 from the EHV version says, dedicate a child to the way he should go, and even when he becomes old, he will not turn away from it. And I was thinking about that because, notice it doesn't say dedicate a child to a school system or to someone else, and they will train your child in the way that they should go so they don't depart from it. I mean, it's really Solomon, the one whoever was writing the proverb at that time, I'd have to go back, I think it's Solomon. He's talking about, no, parents, fathers specifically, you need to be a part of your child's upbringing. You need to dedicate, and you need to be a part of this and say, this is where we need to go. This is how you should be acting. This is what you should be doing. And you should be engaging in this. This is a side comment altogether. I know that kids need to be around other kids at times. I get it. But have you ever felt that you're raising a young adult, you're raising a child who the intention is that they will become an adult? Well, who's going to be the best person to raise a child to become an adult? Not other kids. And I hate to say it, one person, no matter what school you're in, who has 30 other kids to look at, isn't going to be able to do that job for that one person. And so you get into a public school system or whatever where you have 30 kids and one teacher. I'm sorry, other kids are raising your kid. You're not raising him to be an adult.
And it's something that is halfway recognized in that type of a setup, with the anti-bullying things that the school has, because they realize that the Lord of the Flies principle is taking place.
Oh, but you can't read the Lord of the Flies book anymore. You can't
read
that.
Because it's too accurate?
Well, yes, because critical thinking skills apply, and you'll find, wait a second, this looks oddly familiar. Just like you can't read Animal Farm anymore, because
I made my daughter read that.
Everything becomes too familiar, right? It becomes too much of hits too close to home. Sorry about this, listeners. We're getting a little off topic.
We got off. Can I bring us a little bit back on track?
And, yeah.
And it comes back to what is, you know, we are not, even though it might sound like, listeners, that we are anti-public school, We're really not. We can't say we're the biggest fans, but yet at the same time we realize that for many people it's the only alternative that they can. And maybe we need to focus a little bit about what is the Christian's role in the public school, the student,
and the parent,
the student and the parent, and then also. And also not only in the elementary school setting, the high school setting, but even taking it into the college level. Let me give you an example. Quite a few years ago, I had a young lady that I had taken her through confirmation class. She was in youth group. She graduates from high school and attends North Dakota State University. While she's there, she contacts me and she says, Pastor, I need some help. I need some help for a paper. Okay. I said, okay, Darby, I said, what's the paper that you're doing? She says, I'm doing a paper on prostitution. She says, I just need some help to see some things that the church has said about it. You know, for, and since it's the oldest institution in the world, prostitution, that is. She said, I'm sure the church has many things. And I helped her with that and got her some stuff. And then I said to her, Darby, I said, when you get done with your paper, please email me a copy. I'd be interested in it. She was no longer a member of mine at that time. A couple months later, I get an email with the attached Word filed on it, and I look at the paper, and I read on how she, as she's talking about this, she is in favor of legalized prostitution. And so I'm looking at one of the things I did, you know, I'm no longer her pastor, but I called her up and talked to her about, okay, you know that this goes against everything that you are, that you supposedly stand on. And we had some discussions about that. Another instance, you have talked about some things, and I want to come back to that because I appreciate your, even though you didn't go to a public school in later on, you know, in the later grades in elementary school and in high school, you still had some witnessing to do, and I believe that's the role of the Christian in the public school system and also in the system that you were in. I had a question come to me from a couple of sisters, twins that I had in Minnesota. They went to play at Dakota State University basketball, wonderful basketball players at Dakota State University in it's over on the east side of the state, doesn't matter, Madison. They had been going there for about a year, and both girls come home to visit, and they said, Pastor, we need to sit down and talk with you. I said, sure. So they sit down, and they said, Pastor, did you realize that the women's basketball program there is dominated by lesbians? I said, no, I didn't, but I said, it doesn't surprise me. And they go, we're basically being recruited. And I said, just to make sure, I said, well, you've already been recruited for basketball. And they go, I mean, really, they're really forcing us, they're forcing their beliefs on us. And not only to be accepting, but
to engage in it.
And they go, how do we handle this, Pastor? I said, how have you been handling it so far? And they said, well, we've been saying that we're here to play basketball, not to go against what your sexual beliefs or whatever. And since we're here to play basketball and you're here to play basketball, what does your sexual orientation have to do
just
with this
basketball
program?
Right.
And I said, your wife's beyond your years. But Pastor, we want to witness too. I said, that's a wonderful thing. I said, so now, you don't want this to be a constant everyday battle. But I said, it's good to pray to the Lord for guidance to where He gives you the wisdom when to speak up and when to be silent.
Sure.
Coming back again to that point about witnessing, I always appreciated what you said about going to the school that you went to, because I've had parents send their children to non-denominational schools, and the children, every single one of them, stopped being Lutheran.
Well, I haven't stopped being Lutheran.
Well,
but I think that I think before I can tell you what I did, I have to tell you that it came down to I have a mother that has always been, we talk religion at the house. We talk about the catechism at the house. The catechism was an open book at our kitchen table regularly. You know, when I was young, I woke up in the morning early one time and I came out.
And let me clarify here that Mrs. Harley is not a Lutheran elementary school teacher.
She is not.
Or a Lutheran pastor's wife.
She is not.
Okay.
I woke up early one morning when I was young, and I walked out and I saw my mom reading her Bible. And after that, every morning I woke up early and I joined her, and that was what we did. religion has always been on discussion in our house. My mom, and she dragged my dad sometimes kicking and screaming into those conversations because my dad had fun with it. He played devil's advocate. I mean, that's his thing. But the reality of the situation is there was never anything that was off topic to discuss for religion or anything else for that matter in the house, because my mom took an active role in saying nothing is hidden. And I'm not, and my mom also said, if you made a wrong choice, if you tell us, she would never get mad, ever. There was never I will punish you for it. It was, you might have made a wrong choice, but if you were honest about it and you brought it to me and we talked about it and we learned from it and we move on from it, that doesn't mean you won't have external consequences, but there were no consequences with her. And that translated into my experience in my grade school, in the non-denominational realm, and also in the high school in the non-denominational realm, because every time I would go to confirmation and pastor would say, okay, this is our confirmation. We'd go through all our memory work, but I would go home and it was reinforced again. It was reinforced again by my parents who said, my mom specifically, that this was a thing that was important to her. And it was a thing that she talked about, and it was a thing that she lived. So she would in her life, she would always say, if you see me doing something that you know not to be right, you have the right to call me on it too.
Yep.
But here's the other thing. When we got to church, and I remember this as a kid too, when I was still old enough to go to Sunday school, I told mom, I said, Mom, I don't want to go to Sunday school. For some reason, I didn't like Sunday school when I was a kid. Mom said, fine, you don't have to go to Sunday school. And I said, all right. And she said, but you will be with me in adult Bible study. That wasn't a choice.
Just slow it down here a little bit. Notice everything that you say, we come back full circle here. Religion, Christianity, the Bible, faith, Christ was a culture of your family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was a culture my brother didn't get. Unfortunately, when I was born, my brother has a different mother, and my brother was going on 7 by the time I was born. And so that whole fundamental time where that culture could be instilled in him wasn't there. That whole beginning 7 years of my brother's life, my dad did the best he could, but my dad was not an avid churchgoer. In fact, wasn't a churchgoer until my mom came along. And so my brother kind of missed out on that, and it never stuck. Not that he's an unbeliever, but he is not. He's like my dad. He's kind of a non-practicing, fill in the blank, whatever he seems to be. But my mom always, that was the way I was raised. It was we are going to do this together. We came to church together. We went and stayed for Bible study together. When my mom would volunteer for the altar guild and go in and change the parament cloths, she brought me along and I helped her. And it was a part of what we did. Coming up in front of church and seeing the altar and seeing the pulpit and being a part of that was never a foreign thing to me. It was one of the things that I did in church here at Trinity when I came. I the first thing I said is, your kids come with you to receive communion. And that was a new thing for them. They're like, why would you do that? And I said, because they can receive a blessing, but nothing that happens up here is a mystery. Yep. It is open. They can see it. They can see God's grace. They can be welcome to the table.
And that is so important. Again, with that culture, and I don't know, maybe the culture that I was, the community culture that I was raised in Delano, Minnesota, back in the 1960s, in the 1970s, was a little bit different. To give you a picture, there were 3 feeders to the public high school. You had the public school elementary, you had 2 Roman Catholic elementary schools, and you had a Lutheran elementary school. Part of my experience was this, that I knew quite a few of these kids when I got to public high school, didn't know a lot of them. Knew, had, had, I was pretty much, maybe it was sheltered being in the Lutheran elementary school system. But once we got this hodgepodge together in the high school, religion was not off limits in our discussions and in our interactions. The Methodists and the Lutherans talked to each, had questions with each other. The Lutherans and the Catholics and the Methodists, which basically you had three churches in town. They were Lutheran, Catholic, and Methodist. Sure. And we weren't afraid to talk about it. It wasn't arguing. It was questioning. It was witnessing.
And I had that in my school when I was in the non-denominational. We had many, many discussions between the student body. I was the only Lutheran. I was like this odd duck in the whole sea of ecumenical smatterings. If you want to talk about syncretism and everyone come together and sing Kumbaya, that was kind of the moral of the story. But it got to be a point when we would have religion class, because it was mandatory, and I would be in there, and we had a Baptist pastor who came in, and he wore a cowboy hat, and he had a leather vest on, and he had spurs on his boots.
Would have fit in very well out here.
Would have fit in excellent out here. And he would walk in, and he would teach class. And then about halfway through the class, he would stop, and he would say, "Now, for everybody here, let's hear the Lutheran side." And he would calm on me. And he meant it as a point of derision. He always did. But he gave me an opportunity. If there was something that was discredited, and it was specifically because he was preaching from, if I remember correctly, the Westminster Catechism, that the whole class was based on this Westminster Catechism. And so he would read it, they would talk about it, and I've used this example to you before, but one of the things I remember we got to talking about the sacraments, but he didn't call them the sacraments. But they were the sacraments, the ordinances, exactly. And so he would talk about baptism, and he would talk about, we talked about the Lord's Supper, and I can't give you the details of the one on baptism. I can give you the details on the one on the Lord's Supper. They're talking about the Lord's Supper, and he had made mention. He says, "Well, you know, this is just a show, a remembrance, a thing, you know, something that we do to remember Christ crucified and all this kind of stuff." And then he said, "Well, let's hear the Lutheran side of it." Because in that class, they did put up there, you know, Catholics believe this, you know, Lutherans believe this, and Reformed believe this, or, you know, non-denominational believe this. And so he said, "Well, let's hear from," "let's hear from the horse's mouth what the Lutherans believe." And so I told him, I said, "We believe in the real presence." I said, "We believe in Christ truly being present in, with, and under the bread and the wine in a mysterious and miraculous way, that he comes and provides himself to us, not only for the forgiveness of sins, not only to remember his sacrifice, but to actually be with us presently." And he goes, "I just can't see," and I remember this conversation, he said, "I just can't see how that's possible. I can't," he said, "you cannot rationalize that to me." And I said to him, and I quote, "You believe in the sovereignty of God, that God can do all things?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "If you believe God can do all things, wouldn't this qualify as one of all?" He said, "Well, moving on." That was the end of that conversation.
But, you know, Pastor Harley here is quite a bit younger than I am. I'm old enough to be his father. But anyway, my point is this, lest you think that I'm trying to think back to glory days to hear. The opportunities for witnessing in the public school system are still here, and there's plenty of that going on. You know a few examples of I'm talking to here, but I'm just going to go into my own congregation and community. I have had the opportunity to minister to and instruct young people that have been brought to church, brought to instruction, brought to the Lord, and are faithful members of our congregation because of the witness of their classmates.
Sure, absolutely.
I think of one right now. She's teaching Sunday school for us, Maggie McCarty.
Yeah.
Wonderful young lady, faith shared by a couple of her friends, Pastor White's daughters.
Yeah.
Up there at school, yeah. Sadie Camp, who no longer lives in Cologne, but they're another one, had the privilege to instruct and confirm both of them. And it's interesting to hear, as I hear the students in from my church talk about things, usually there's a lot of religious discussion between the members from Zion and the members at Calvary Chapel.
Yeah. Well, you know, and those are good discussions. Honestly, those are discussions that need to be had. One of the things you said, you know, the witness of a couple of members, and that goes a long way. I had just in catechism, I was only supposed to have one new catechism student start this year. Well, he showed up to catechism and he brought a friend. He brought a friend from school, and never knew the guy, never had any, no idea. But he said to me, he goes, he said as he sat down, he said, "This is my friend. He wanted to come to catechism." I told him about catechism start, and he wanted to come. So I said, "Did you want to stay for all the class?" He says, "Yeah." So I bought him a book, bought him a Bible. The church bought him it. He's been to every single class. Now, does he come to church every Sunday? No. But he's in every single confirmation class. Will he be confirmed at the end of 3 years? I don't know. But
you've had the opportunity to teach,
yeah,
and witness.
And he is reading the scriptures. He's participating in the class. He's hearing of God's grace for him. Just this last Sunday, or this last Wednesday, that same gentleman brought another friend. He said, "Well, we saw him. We got to be his friend. We invited him to come, and he said he wanted to come." So now I have three first years where I'm only supposed to have one, and two of them were brought by one of them.
You know, I don't know if I should even go down this road, but do you notice a difference there between our children going, "Come and see," and the difference of the adults saying, "You should be in church"?
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe that's a topic for another discussion. But no, it is. You know, our children, I mean, my son did this too. I remember when we first moved here, you know, 8+ years ago, and my son was just turned 2, and we had our first funeral, and he came over with me. And during that funeral, he met some other kids that were around the same age that were kind of bummed for the person who passed away. And I remember I just sat back, and the ladies, they came up to me who were doing the meal, and they said to me, they said, do you know what your son is doing?" And I said, "No, I don't. I have no idea what he's doing." That's a loaded question. I said, "I have no idea what he's doing." But they said, "Your son is walking these kids through the church and pointing out, you know, here's the altar. This is where God comes to us." And then point to, this is the pulpit where my dad reads God's word to us. This is the baptismal font where God claimed me and claims you. And then he would walk him back, and he goes, "And these are the ladies that are serving our Lord, and this is what they're providing for us." And he was taking them through all of these different areas in the church and explaining to these kids how all the numerous ways that the Lord has blessed him and all these things. And I'm like, you know, this is a 2-year-old. This is a 2-year-old who's pointing to all these different things. And now I articulated it a little bit better than he did, but essentially that's what he was saying to these kids. And you go and as a Christian in the public school, what an opportunity for you, right? What an opportunity for you to have those conversations. But I come back to, and we've sort of hedged on this already, those conversations cannot be had if they're not being had at home. If those conversations are not being talked about, yep, at home, if your parents are not talking about catechism and about your belief, and I'm not just saying you have to, you should, you must, but I'm saying, look at the grace that we have. Look at the blessing that we have. Taking seriously the wonderful gifts that their church offers. You know, it goes a long way to say that when you come to church on a Sunday, mom and dad are happy to be there. And the children are then happy to be there because they're happy to be with mom and dad. And when the mom and dad are happy and they engage in this, they're like, you know what? This is a good thing. Mom likes this. Dad likes this. This is a good thing for us to be here. And then when they come home, instead of complaining about, did you know what Pastor did today? Can you believe it? How long he preached? Do you know that hymn that he played? I can't believe that he would put that. I hate that blue book or whatever the case may be. But instead of saying that, say, you know, what did Pastor talk about? You know, I really liked this point of the sermon. Or did you know that on Reformation, did you notice that we used the catechism as our order of service? I never knew we could do that. Maybe we should start learning that. Maybe we should start using the catechism in a house like that.
You know, the other about a week ago here, I received a phone call from one of my members who was in college, and he had a question about a particular subject, and he said, "Can you help me with that?" And I said, "Sure." He says, "Well, where can I look?" And I said, "Did your previous pastor, because I didn't have the opportunity to instruct this young man, I said, did your previous pastor make you purchase a catechism?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Do you still have that said catechism?" "Yeah." I said, "Well, go get your catechism." And I said, "Do you realize that pretty much for any situation in life, you can find in your catechism the particular scripture that will speak to that?" "You're kidding, Pastor." I said, "I'm sure your pastor told you that." "Well, yeah, he did." And so we sat down and we had a nice hour and a half long discussion about that. But he said, "You know what, Pastor?" He said, maybe my catechism needs to be next to my bed at night. I said, "That's where mine is."
Yeah. I have three of them. I keep one at the office. I keep one in my bag, and I carry one with me, you know, at home, and it's right there next to me.
And this discussion of it, you know, as I know listeners, it sounds like we're kind of wandering here, but with our topic of the public school
and Christians
and Christians, we have this. This is really coming down to again. Vocation. And I like what you brought up, Pastor Harley, about culture. I don't think that's necessarily where we were intending on going, but I really believe that that's something that's so profound. A lot of reasons that this is a problem in the public school or in other areas, it's because Christians fail to have their religion be their culture.
Well, sure. How many times do you have, well, in your congregation, in my congregation, and I'm pretty sure in the congregation I'm going to at St. John's, we're going to have the older generation who have said, "But Pastor, I told my kids they had to do this, and I'm so disappointed that they didn't." But the gospel doesn't work with telling. The gospel works with proclaiming, and the gospel works with living.
The gospel doesn't work with commands.
No, it works with living it and bearing the fruit of it and proclaiming it over a sinner who doesn't deserve it. And so when you're in your house, and this comes back to that vocational calling, when you're in your house and your children make a mistake and they come to you and they say, "I'm sorry, I made this mistake," and then you can immediately, you punish them. That's law. That's law.
Yep.
But they came to you. They were honest. They felt horrible about it, and you forgive their sin. That's gospel. And that's faith in action. That's the church in action. That's what you do when you come to church, as you say, "I'm sorry, I am a horrible sinner," and you are none proclaimed free of all of those sins. But come back down to the catechism as we want to wrap it up here, because I think if you want a tool, if you want a tool to use as a Christian student going into the public school, grab your catechism. Grab your catechism because, and this is where the Missouri Synod, I think, has outshone us in some regards. The new Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Catechism, I love it. The way it's arranged, it is beautiful. And I highly recommend the EHV version. The ESV version is excellent. The NIV version, I won't comment on that right now. But the way that it's arranged is awesome. But what I was going to say is the LCMS has got us head over tails in devotional books on living devotionally the catechism with your children and in your family and every single day.
Yep.
And I mean, they've got you know, the model of discipleship, a primer on the catechism. They've got Where Is My Joy?
Northwestern Publishing House does have one out. It's called Living Luther's Catechism, if my memory serves me correctly.
There is one, but but the majority, I mean, there's just tons of material out there on how do I incorporate the catechism into my life.
Can I throw one more log on the fire here just in our last 5-10 minutes? Because, and I'm thinking about this as we're talking about the public school, you have members that have been teachers in the public school system. I have members that have been teachers in the public school system. I think maybe we should say a few things about that so we don't cause unnecessary offense or propagate negative ideas that are not there.
Oh, sure. I have two. I've had two in this particular congregation. That one is still subbing. Actually, I have more than that. I take that back. I have three. One is still subbing. One has retired, and one is actively teaching. And if you go to the one that is retired, she will tell you that, yep, even though when she was teaching school, she could not talk openly and say, this is what you should believe. She was able to give hope and comfort for those kids that were struggling, just by being there, listening, offering, when they asked, here's something to consider, and that as a testimony. The one who continues to still sub, I mean, it's well known. He is well known within the community. He is very vocal about what church he goes to and why he goes there, and you know, he is a man who will give you the benefit of the doubt, whether you deserve it or not. And I think that character quality shines through as the example, the bearing of the fruit, right? An apple tree will bear apples. And the apple tree doesn't say, hey, look at me, everybody, I'm bearing apples. It just does. It just bears apples. And he's one of those guys who just bears apples. It's his son, actually. It's his son who was still actively teaching. And he again does it as a possibility, like I said, again, he gives it through his examples and the way he lives his life. That's just what he does. So, yeah, I would say those are the examples that I have.
Yep.
Of people who in this day and age, you know, they live bearing the fruit of.
And there's a lot of, and as you say, there's a lot of good witness that goes on there. As these people live their faith, not necessarily proclaiming it verbally, but living it, is a tremendous and a wonderful, mm-hmm. a wonderful witness as well. And we need Christians in those areas. We need Christians teaching in the public schools,
sure,
as well as we need them in our Lutheran schools.
Absolutely. And we need ones that are at home talking about their faith.
Yes.
And sharing it. Well, that brings us, I think, to a pretty good closing point for our discussion today.
And I want to thank our members who teach at the public schools. And thank you for your faith and your living that. You know, you don't let that you don't hide your light under a bushel.
Absolutely. And I also want to thank our kids that are going to the public schools and that are letting their light shine as they take what they learn in church, what they take what they learn at home, and they live it in their life there among their friends and are a witness to them. And so thank you for that. Thank you, listener, for going through this with us and holding on for dear life as we made our way through. Again, if you want to reach us, castingnetspod@gmail.com. Will get us an email. Like, subscribe for the weekly podcasts as they come out. And it's good to have Don back as a host. And we'll have Lexi probably on at another time down the road and other guests as we see an opportunity to incorporate them. But until then, may God richly bless you as you go about your day. Anything else you have for them?
Have a wonderful weekend. If you're deer hunting, be careful.